Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Wednesday, April 21st, 2021. This is Section A, the front page. The headline reads, City Finishes Upgrades to Water Treatment Facility, by Caitlin Randall. The City of Midland and Pioneer Natural Resources partnered 5 years ago to upgrade the city's water treatment facility in exchange for Pioneer using the city's wastewater. Now those upgrades have finally been completed. The city and Pioneer held a ribbon-cutting ceremony Tuesday morning to unveil the upgraded facility, which was finished in March, according to the city's utilities director, Carl Crago. Pioneer will use the city's wastewater for hydraulic fracturing and selling some of the reclaimed water to other oil companies. It's a partnership that similar oil-producing cities like Odessa have already made to sell reclaimed water to companies looking to avoid using fresh water. It keeps Pioneer and other companies from using water that is needed in smaller communities, Crago said. Assistant Utilities Director Corey Moose said the project will also reduce traffic because companies will be using pipelines instead of trucks, and generally this will lower the city's carbon footprint. The city was approached several years ago by companies asking if the city could upgrade their water systems so wastewater could be cleaned for fracturing, Crago said. The city and Pioneer in December 2016 agreed to a deal for Pioneer to make $125 million in improvements to the city's wastewater treatment plant in return for a supply of reclaimed water. Pioneer also agreed to pay the city up to $2.5 million annually for the sale of treated water. That deal was amended in June 2018 to include $8 million in additional improvements, which the two entities split the cost of. Construction on the upgrades began a month after the deal was amended. Some of the upgrades made include improved sludge and scum removal, new biological reactor basins, a tank, secondary clarifiers, pumping systems, UV disinfection and filters, Moose said. The upgrades weren't planned before the deal with Pioneer, but the city had been considering what was needed to upgrade their water plant, according to Crago. They would have been needed sooner rather than later, he said. The way the city has gotten rid of our fluid before today was we were land applying it, meaning we were doing cross management or farming about 16 miles south of town. We were getting to the point where we couldn't be doing that for much longer, so the plant upgrades were going to be needed to be done. This article is entitled Horseshoe Manager Addresses Water Issues Discussed by Commissioners, by Caitlin Randall. Horseshoe Hospitality owner and manager Joe Kelly has responded to concerns raised by county commissioners last week about nonprofits and youth sport leagues not being permitted to bring large quantities of water into the facility. In an interview with the Reporter Telegram, Kelly said there were details left out of the commissioner's court discussion last Friday. He said he couldn't attend the meeting and would have preferred the discussion to be tabled until he could provide responses to the court's concerns. County Judge Terry Johnson, who made the Horseshoe facility and its management a central focus of his election campaign in 2018, added discussion about the Horseshoe's water policies to the meeting agenda. "He never said anything to me," Kelly said. "I'm assuming he just naturally assumes I'm in the wrong, and he calls a meeting and tries to embarrass me in public, as opposed to trying to get both sides of the story, to get the facts." When asked if he would consider allowing nonprofits to bring their own packs of water to events at the facility, Kelly said nonprofits make up most of their business, and making that exception may be too broad. He said 501c3 organizations hold a variety of events like banquets where bringing their own water might not make sense. However, Kelly said he's open to listening to any recommendations by the commissioner's court. Commissioner Randy Prude last Friday suggested a work session with the court, County Auditor Veronica Morales, and County Attorney Russell Malm to discuss the contract between Midland County and Horseshoe Hospitality. I think we have a very fair contract, but we'll consider anything that the court brings up, Kelly. Backpack drive with attendees waiting in line. One event that was discussed by the Commissioner's Court was a backpack drive, a nonprofit held at the Horseshoe to distribute backpacks and other school supplies to children in need. About 4,000 attendees waited in line before they could enter the facility, and the nonprofit was told they couldn't distribute water. Kelly said Horseshoe Hospitality was not aware that those attending the backpack drive, which was held in August 2019, would be standing in line for an extended amount of time. "We hadn't realized we were going to have this onslaught of people at 9 o'clock on a Saturday morning, and it was going to take a long time to get these people through the line," he said. "Had we known that, and they asked about setting up water for people out there in line, we would have allowed that. It's common sense to allow donated water to be passed out to people waiting in line," Kelly said. Youth sport games. Children who participate in youth sports can bring personal water bottles to games at the Horseshoe, Kelly said. However, parents are not allowed to bring portable coolers into the facility, which Kelly said some parents have complained about. He said this is a standard practice at entertainment venues for safety reasons, because the contents of the coolers are unknown. Lehigh Mom Prom. A prom that was put together by parents of Lee High School students last weekend was also discussed by the Commissioner's Court. Some commissioners wanted the parents to be allowed to bring their own water bottles. Kelly said the prom was not organized by Midland ISD, and a group of parents rented the Horseshoe as an alternative to the MISD prom. He said the parents were given the option to bring their own water for a fee of $1 a bottle, but opted instead to have the Horseshoe open the concession stand. Because the group charged admission to students attending the prom, Kelly said he felt it was the right decision to ask the group to pay if they brought in water. This article is entitled Small Bites. Fatberg's Wing Bar Brings Different Wing Experience to Town by J.C. Lewis. Officials with Fatbird's Wing Bar want to bring a unique wing experience to West Texas. Currently, the restaurant is still in a soft opening period, trying to find a consistent supplier for a great product and hiring more staff for an expected increase in hours and dining options. Business partners Brian Levy and his wife Kim Tran, Mai Nguyen, and John Tran decided to open a wing bar because options for wings in Midland included Wingstop and Buffalo Wild Wings. Levy is originally from California, but would visit his in-laws in Midland with his wife. He had always talked about potentially opening a restaurant because at the time he had been working in telecommunications. Levy said he went to culinary school at the California Culinary Academy, an affiliate of Le Cordon Bleu in San Francisco. He also has experience working in kitchens, including at Opal's Table. His wife also works in the kitchen at Fatbird's Wing Bar, and while she doesn't have any professional experience, Levy said she is a great cook. "I was very comfortable in California, but I saw the potential out here," he said. "People love to eat out here and appreciate new restaurants to the area." Originally, Levy wanted to have a boba tea shop, but things weren't clicking. While talking to his brother-in-law, John, they had the idea to do something with chicken wings, Levy said. They started working on the Fatbird's Wing Bar idea in 2018, and by late 2019, the partners had found a location at 3209 Courtyard Drive, Suite L, near the intersection of Loop 250 and Midkiff Road. Issues with contractors delayed the building progress, and then the pandemic stopped everything for a while. "When we got around to opening Fatbird's, we didn't want it to be an average wing experience," Levy said. "We started to create the menu, and of course, we have to have the classics like buffalo, lemon pepper, and garlic parmesan, but we wanted to do those flavors in our own way and style." He said to develop the buffalo sauce, he went through at least 80 different ways to make buffalo sauce before settling on a sauce they liked. The same method applies to every sauce created for the restaurant, which are all homemade. The menu features 6-piece, 8-piece, and 12-piece wings in the following flavors: buffalo, barbecue, garlic parm, mango habanero, truffalo, Mexicali, lemon pepper, orange, aloha, satay, sweet Saigon, and Soul Street. The menu also features fat fries in a variety of flavors: garlic noodles, pot stickers, mac and cheese, egg rolls, hot Cheeto mac, and cheese and fried pickles. The dessert menu consists of mochi in strawberry, mango, coffee, and green tea flavors. The restaurant also has a full bar with Tall City Brewing Company beers on tap. He said they are still working on creating a specialty drinks menu. Levy said the bartenders are great and can make basically any drink a customer would request. The restaurant is also hiring for all positions during this time. People can apply by stopping in the store, calling, or emailing the restaurant. The restaurant has been operating under soft opening hours from 3 to 9 p.m., Wednesday to Monday, and closed on Tuesday since the beginning of April. Levy said they want to add lunch hours and even have brunch hours on the weekend. Other food news. Tall City Brewing Company announced being open for more hours. The brewery will be open on Tuesdays from 3 p.m. to 9 p.m. and have started opening at noon on Fridays. Honey Donuts has opened a second location in Odessa at 4201 North Dixie Street, Suite 100. The shop is open 7 days a week from 5 a.m. to 1 p.m. This is the local and state page. This article is entitled, 1 Year After Negative Oil, Prices Settle Above $62, by Andres Guerra-Luz, Bloomberg. Oil slumped the most in 2 weeks alongside a broader market rout as a resurgent virus in some of the world's top oil importers highlighted the uneven road to recovery. West Texas Intermediate fell 1.5% to the lowest in a week as the S&P 500 index posted its first back-to-back decline since late March. The rampant virus spread in countries such as India is casting a shadow on optimism over the global economic rebound. Annual crude imports in the Asian country fell for the first fiscal year since the late 1990s, with refiners cutting run rates. WTI for May delivery, which expired Tuesday, fell 94 cents to settle at $62.44. The more active June contract settled at $62.67. We've seen risk appetite reverse, said Bart Melick, head of commodity strategy at TD Securities. Variants are wreaking havoc on some communities, and it's uncertain how the whole demand picture will evolve. Still, the market is a far cry from where it was a year ago today, when an unprecedented crisis saw U.S. benchmark crude futures closing at negative $37.63 a barrel. The historic plunge came as lockdowns savaged demand, and key producers Saudi Arabia and Russia flooded the market in a price war. A restoration of OPEC Plus unity marked by deep supply cuts, as well as vaccine distribution around the world, have helped prices to climb back. Despite near-term headwinds, there are also points of optimism for an upcoming surge in global oil consumption. Driving is soaring in the UK, as more than 60% of its population over 18 has received a first vaccine dose. Vitol Group, the world's largest independent oil trader, expects demand to come roaring back, echoing optimistic views from OPEC and the International Energy Agency. Once we get into May, we should start to see the next leg down in the virus, and that will be a tailwind for oil, said Jay Hatfield, CEO at Infracap in New York. Until we get there, prices are likely to be range-bound. Futures were little changed after the American Petroleum Institute was said to report domestic crude stockpiles rose 436,000 barrels last week, while gasoline supplies fell by more than 1.6 million barrels. If confirmed by U.S. government data on Wednesday, that would be the first weekly increase in crude inventories in 4 weeks. In physical markets, front month WTI's widening discount to Brent is lowering foreign demand for U.S. sour crudes. Southern Green Canyon is trading at the smallest discount to NYMEX crude futures in 2 months, while other sours like Mars Blend and Poseidon have also strengthened recently. WTI is trading at nearly $4 a barrel premium to Brent, compared to $3 at the end of March. This article is entitled, Report. Average age of MISD school buildings approaches 54 years, by Stuart Doreen. 25 Midland ISD school buildings are at least 50 years old, and the average age of 38 schools are 53.7 years, according to a facilities assessment provided to the school board this week. The report went on to show that 21 schools are at least 60 years old, that the average secondary school is 66.4 years of age, and that the average elementary school is 51.03 years. The report by Huckabee Architect Group showed those schools account for 3.44 million square feet and 429 acres. While Huckabee officials told the Midland ISD board that the facilities are in pretty good shape, considering their age, the cost summary of the improvements needed are $266.05 million. That includes $50.02 million of improvements required at Midland High and $28.6 million at Lee High. The report also states the total potential replacement costs on all campuses are $868.72 million. Huckabee officials told school board members Tuesday night that if the deficiency list is 40% of replacement costs, the school officials might at least want to have conversations about replacements at a particular campus. Lee's cost to replace totaled $105.85 million. Midland High's was $92.39 million, according to Huckabee. Pricing provided does not include any anticipated general contractor overhead and profit, fees, or other soft costs that might be associated with the project, the report stated. Midland High is the oldest building on any campus. It was built in 1928, according to the report. This is the opinion page. This column is called Opinion Extra. It is entitled, Mayors Peyton Jovan to Highlight Thursday Conversation, by Stuart Doreen. I've never been to the Rolling Sevens Ranch Event Center. That changes Thursday night, but not only will I be at the Western Midland County location, but so will Midland Mayor Patrick Peyton and Odessa Mayor Javier Jovan. We will be participating in A Conversation with the Mayors, an event brought to the people of Midland and Odessa by the Midland Liberty Leadership Council. Peyton and Jovan as the mayors, and myself as the guest moderator. What is the Liberty Leadership Council? According to the Texas Public Policy Foundation, the LLC is meant, quote, to foster meaningful relationships among young professionals between the ages of 21 and 40 who share the values of individual liberty, personal responsibility, and free enterprise, and to engage these individuals in the mission of the Texas Public Policy Foundation, unquote. So what will be the purpose of the free event, which is scheduled for 7 to 8 p.m. at the center located at 11700 West County Road 122 inside Midland County? The Facebook page about the event states that the mayors will discuss issues that are unique for each city, as well as overlapping issues, future planning, and the ways the two cities can work better together. I would add, we will get to have needed discussions about what's next. Our communities appear to have gotten a taste of life beyond COVID, and we want more. And these leaders are probably ready for city business not dominated by COVID. The discussion I am hoping to see is not the general awareness discussion that is part of the typical lecture circuit, but to take a deeper dive into infrastructure, economic development, and conservatism in local government. Has the Development Corporation outlived its usefulness in Midland and Odessa? What can Midland learn from the issues the city of Odessa is having with its county assistance districts? Is it really possible to be a conservative and still take care of the so-called quality of place expectations of a community? What are the real worries going into this year's budget season, as sales tax revenue is down and there's only so much leaders can do with the tax rate? Along the way, we will talk about a city's relationship with the state of Texas and its leaders, final lessons from mask politics, and how young people can make their mark in local governance. These are two of potentially more transformative leaders their cities have seen, but the key word here is potentially. If COVID is in the rearview mirror, how do they live up to that potential and take their respective communities to different levels? Remember, this event is free and open to the public. However, seating is limited. Organizers recommend that those interested go to eventbrite.com and secure their seat. Complimentary coffee and desserts will be served. This is the obituary column, Wednesday, April 21st. Jimmy David Kemp. Jimmy David Kemp, Dave, was born November 26, 1939, in Merkel, Texas, to Ross and Eva Kemp. He died in Austin on April 19, 2021. He is preceded in death by his parents, Ross and Eva Kemp, and son, Barrett Todd Kemp. He is survived by daughter Catherine Kemp of Austin and son Greg Kemp, Molly, and grandchildren Olivia and Drew Kemp of Dexter, Michigan. Also surviving are sister Lynn Lynch Joe of Liberty Hill, Texas, and two nephews. The family thanks TechRidge Oaks and Choice Hospice of Austin for their compassionate care. A family memorial service will be held. Randall Randy Hoyt Brooks, 1957 to 2021. On June 17, 1957, Randall Randy Hoyt Brooks was born in Texarkana, Arkansas, to Henry Hoyt Brooks and Audrey Lumpkin Brooks. He was the third of five children. He grew up in Midland and attended Lee High School. Randy was preceded in death by his father, Henry Hoyt Brooks, and his nieces, Amy Lynn Johnson and Kellyanne Brooks. Randy is survived by his wife Marisol Brooks, his mother Audrey Brooks, his siblings Debbie Scott, Vicki Draper, Gary Brooks, and Stephen Brooks, and his children Jason Brooks, Misty Brooks, Lacey Brooks, Daniela Lanis, Alexis Green, and Jassy Brooks. Randy is also survived by 12 grandchildren and two great-grandchildren. The family will receive friends from 6 to 8 p.m. Wednesday, April 21st at Nally Pickle and Wells Funeral Home. A celebration of his life will be held 12 p.m. Thursday, April 22nd at First Baptist Church Chapel. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Wells Funeral Home and Crematory in Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Sally Lavina Womble Strain. Sally Lavina Womble Strain was born June 21, 1932, in Hereford, Texas, to C. Baker and Ruth Womble. The granddaughter of Des Smith County pioneers Troy Womble and Sally Alphadine Baker Womble, and the late William Epperson and Vina Owl Epperson of Arkansas. Sally was predeceased by her husband in 1990 and her parents. Sally is survived by her son Wesley of Midland and his wife Gail and daughter Emily. Her daughter Sherry of Dunmore, Pennsylvania, and her wife Rose and sons Eugene and William. 12 nieces and nephews from her husband's family. Several of her Womble cousins, her sister-in-law Darlene Strain, and her special friends Betty Davenport, Irene Trotter of Amarillo, and Anne Worthen of Midland. Sally died Monday, April 12th in Midland. Graveside services were at West Park Cemetery, Hereford, Texas, on Monday, April 19th at 2 p.m., with the Reverend Lane Boyd officiating. A memorial service in the chapel of First United Methodist Church of Midland will be held on Saturday, April 24th at 2 p.m., with the Reverend Steve Brooks officiating. In lieu of flowers, the family suggests memorial contributions to the Ethel Womble Scholarship Fund for future teachers. P.O. Box 95, Hereford, Texas, 79045, or any favorite charity. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Wells Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Stephen Lee Waldron. Stephen Lee Waldron, Stevie, 24, passed away on Sunday, April 18th. A visitation will begin at 12 p.m. on Thursday, April 22nd at the branch at NPW, with the rosary beginning at 7 p.m. Services will be at 10 a.m. on Friday, April 23rd at St. Stephen's Catholic Church. Following the service, we will return to the branch at NPW for viewing. Stephen was born on August 5th, 1996, to Stephen and Argelia Waldron. He was born and raised in Midland. Stephen is survived by his mother, Argelia Waldron, sister Crystal Lopez, nephews Kevin and Aiden Lopez, niece Camilla Lopez, grandmother Martha Carrasco of Midland, grandfather Manuel Carrasco of Odessa, uncles Manuel Carrasco, Jaime Carrasco, Eduardo Carrasco, Aunt Blanca Carrasco, and numerous cousins. Stephen is preceded in death by his father, Stephen Dale Waldron, and his grandfather, Dale Lee Waldron. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Wells Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Susan Marinus Evans. Susan Marinus Evans passed away peacefully on April 19th in Midland, surrounded by a loving family. She was born October 22nd, 1946, in Dallas, to her parents, Dr. Thomas and Betty Sue Marinus. Susie was preceded in death by her parents, Betty Sue and Dr. Thomas Marinus, and her husband's parents, Betty and Sam Evans. She is survived by her husband, Donald L. Evans, her daughter Lisa Moon and husband Shan, and their children Mackenzie, Emily, and Mitchell of Midland, her daughter Jenny Evans of Brookshire, Texas, and her son Donald L. Evans Jr. and wife Warren, and their two sons Donald L. Evans III, Tripp, and Jameson of Marble Falls. She is also survived by two brothers, Thomas P. Marinus Jr. and wife Lucinda of Houston, Stephen J. Marinus and wife Naomi of Porter, Texas, and brother-in-law Richard Evans of Houston, and sister-in-law Peggy Evans Lesh and husband Dr. Jack Lesh of Dallas. She is also survived by multiple nieces and nephews, as well as great-nieces and great-nephews, cherished friends, and loved ones. Memorials may be given in her memory to Bynum School, 5100 Avalon Drive, Midland, 79707. The George W. Bush Foundation, 2943 SMU Boulevard, Dallas, 75205. The Brookwood Community, 1752 Farm to Market Road, 1489 Brookshire, Texas, 77423. The University of Texas MD Anderson Cancer Center, 1840 Old Spanish Trail, Houston, 77054, or a charity of your choice. The family will receive guests from 5 to 7 p.m. Monday, April 26th at First United Methodist Church in Midland. Celebration of Life will be held at 1 p.m. Tuesday, April 27th at First United Methodist Church. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Wells Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Death Notices. Hugo Alberto Rojas. Hugo Alberto Rojas, 68, of Midland, passed away on Friday, April 16th. Arrangements were made with Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home. He is survived by his wife, Sarah Haiti Ortiz, a son, Daniel Rojas, a daughter, Emil Rojas, and two sisters. Nalani Jean Eskimo Mama Kennedy. Nalani Jean Eskimo Mama Kennedy, 50, of Odessa, passed away Thursday, April 8th, in Odessa. A memorial service will be held at 10 a.m. on April 22nd at American Heritage Funeral Home. Arrangements are by American Heritage Funeral Home of Midland.
Hello, this is Cindy reading the Odessa American for Wednesday, April 21st. Showgirls earn contest hardware. When the Odessa High School Showgirls took home hardware from the recent American Dance Drill Team Nationals in Arlington, they were making up for lost time due to COVID-19. Christina Rios is head director for the Odessa High School Showgirls and a dance teacher at OHS, and the assistant director is Ashley Christian. In the small team division, OHS was awarded national champions in hip-hop and national champions in open category, took second in contemporary, third place in jazz, fourth place in palm, second place overall in small team, and fourth place overall in the whole competition, the district newsletter said. This is Rios' sixth year as head director, and she has 23 girls on the team. All of them competed. The American Dance Drill Team Contest is one of the largest in the Dallas area. The teams that take part can come from all over the country and world, but the majority this time were from Texas. We did extremely well, especially from how we started. We started off rough, like I'm pretty sure most teams did. There was a lack of team bonding and knowing how to dance with each other and just simply knowing each other, Rios said. I was extremely nervous for competition this year, but around January is when we started coming around and the girls pulled it together. And I'm very happy with how we ended the year, she added. Rios said she's praying that next year will be a lot more normal. These kids deserve a normal year this year, Rios said. We got a lot taken away from us, pep rallies, football games, a lot of performances that, if they would have happened at the beginning of the year, it would have helped us be a little stronger for this year. We came out on top at the end. She added that she had a lot of new girls this year as well. My returners were the ones who pretty much helped kick everything into gear and fill them in on how stuff was supposed to be, Rios said. She noted that Showgirls is a dance team. The cool thing about Showgirls is, I would like to say we're rough around the edges, but in a good way. We're a little bit more raw. We take a lot of risk with our music, with how we dance, with also staying clean and classy, Rios said. Christian has been with Showgirls for 5 years. She said she has loved every group of girls that has come through. This one is special because there were so many new girls, and she has watched what they were like from the beginning of the year until now. I've just been blown away by their determination to get it, and I feel like in competition they really showed all the work that they've been putting in. So it's been really, really awesome for us, Christian said. Rios said the program has grown from when she first started. This program, it keeps getting better and better, not just because of me, but because simply the girls come here with a desire to dance and to perform and to entertain for the community and for their school, Rios said. Showgirls is year-round. We don't have an off-season, Rios said. Among a myriad of events, the Showgirls dance at University of Texas Permian Basin basketball games, their own basketball games, and hold little showgirl clinics. From January through the end of March is our competitive season. We try not to perform as much because we do hold practice from Monday to Saturday, so it's a lot of wear and tear on the girls. And then after March, we kind of start all over again with tryouts. So, for example, we have officer tryouts today. We have team tryouts at the end of this month, and then once we get the new team, we start practice all over again until the end of May. Then we go to officer camp, and then we're done for a couple of weeks in the summer, and then we start all over again at the end of June, Rios said. Hannah Gray, an 18-year-old senior, Tamara Ramirez, a 16-year-old junior, and Sophie Ramirez, 17-year-old senior, team captain, all said the team has come a long way. I think we did extremely well, considering what we've been through this whole year. Obviously, it wasn't a normal year, but at the end, we pulled through. Although it wasn't as easy in the beginning, we did our best and we came out in second place, which is not bad at all. Even though we didn't get first, in our minds we did, because of everything you went through to get there, Ramirez said. Gray said she felt the same way. I feel like since the beginning of the year didn't start the way we wanted it to, we pulled through at the end. Getting second place was like winning in our eyes, Gray said. Sophie Ramirez said the team did exceptionally well in the contest. She noted that the team rebooted some dances from last year. We were stronger than what we were last year, and we got to experience what it was like to go through different troubles. But in the end, we were still able to conquer something that was challenging for us, Sophie Ramirez said. County sales tax revenues drop. Commissioners say budgeting will keep law enforcement, roads, and environmental enforcement progressing. Gradually rebounding from the effects of the year-long coronavirus pandemic, Ector County's rural economy is fueling sales taxes in the assistance district okayed by voters in 2018, to the point that commissioners expect fiscal 2020-21 revenues to exceed the $12 million they budgeted for last summer. Commissioners Mike Gardner in the Western Precinct 1, where the voters had reacted to an illegal dumping plague by backing the district, and Greg Simmons in Precinct 2, which includes Gardendale, says this year's revenues won't match the $17,480,615 collected in 2019-20, but they may top $14 million. And they say that's good news because the assistant district-mandated bolstering of the sheriff's office, rural roads, and environmental enforcement will therefore not be impeded. Sheriff Griffiths is getting 27 new Chevy Tahoes this summer, and we're doing a good bit with roads like Cottonwood across the north part of the county, from U.S. 385 to Highway 1788, Gardner said. Rush Peterbilt is doing some finishing touches on our new grapple truck for environmental enforcement to use with the 10 roll-off dumpsters we'll have on property the county owns at Tripp and Boyles off the North I-20 service road. We would have to make some adjustments if we didn't get at least $12 million, but it looks like it will be there or a little above. Gardner referred to reports from Texas Comptroller's Office showing comparative receipts from the 1.25 cent sales tax in January this year and last year, respectively of $1,083,821 and $1,756,692. The two February's, $1,473,792 and $2,110,178. The two Marches, $1,523,843 and $1,885,134. And the two Aprils, $1,134,197 and $1,694,233. Receipts through April this calendar year were $5,215,652, compared to $7,446,237 for the same period last year. Simmons said that while the numbers are down so far, they are heartening inasmuch as revenues look likely to exceed expectations. I will guess that it may even be as high as $14 million, he said. Noting the $1,045,618 collection last September and last October's $1,061,446, Simmons said every month since then has been at least in the $1.1 million to $1.2 million range. The sheriff has used the bulk of it to hire more deputies and replace equipment, he said. The new deputies need new vehicles for themselves and to take home, which will help with the law enforcement presence and the response times when they're called back to work. We're doing quite a bit of road construction and are getting caught up on some of the road maintenance. We have doubled the environmental enforcement budget, Simmons said. We bought off-road vehicles for the officers to go into some of these fields to try and catch and remediate the illegal dumping. We bought several roll-off dumpsters and were waiting on a big truck to move those around to different locations. He referred to the $266,938 grapple truck and the court's $2.5 million expenditure for the Tahoes that are coming from Parkway Chevrolet in Tomball, north-northwest of Houston. Other sales tax revenues last year were $1,838,516 in May, $1,405,312 in June, $1,099,450 in July, $1,148,730 in August, $1,227,096 in November, and $1,208,210 in December. 445 days. For 445 days, the city has fought a lawsuit brought by the Odessa American to enforce the state law that guarantees the public's right to see basic police records. Through January 6, the city has spent $112,138.47 of taxpayers' dollars to fight releasing information on crime in Odessa. COVID-19 news. By the numbers, COVID in the basin. Ector County, 16,891 total cases, 363 deaths. ECISD daily cases, 2 students, 0 staff. Midland County, 17,215 total cases, 266 deaths. Texas, 2,855,052 total cases, 49,618 deaths. U.S. cases, 31,541,447 total confirmed, and 564,813 deaths. Find out more and where to get the vaccine at covidinthebasin.com. Quick hits. Autism Walk 10K Run. The 12th Annual Autism Color Walk 10K Run, benefiting SHARE, Sharing Hands, a Respite Experience, will take place from 8:30 a.m. to 1 p.m. Saturday at the Grande Communications Stadium, 5414 Champions Drive, Midland. Prizes will be awarded for the most creative team shirts. Top Fundraiser, Best Run Time, and Most Fun Run Outfit. There will also be raffles and vendors. Volunteers are also needed. To donate or to register, visit secure.qgiv.com/event/AUTSHAWAL202. STD Testing Clinic. The Ector County Health Department, 221 North Texas Avenue, is offering an STD testing clinic from 8 a.m. to 11 a.m. and from 1 p.m. to 4 p.m., April 27th through the 29th. Masks are required. Testing will be done via blood and urine collection. ECHD also offers COVID-19 vaccines, TB testing, and child immunizations. For more information, call 432-498-4141, extension 0. Bacon Fest. United Supermarkets Market Street and Amigos locations across Texas launched their first ever Bacon Fest through May 4th. Throughout that time, each location will be providing a huge selection of bacon-related products. Some of the featured bacon items making an appearance during Bacon Fest will be bacon mac and cheese, BLT pizza, bacon cookies, chocolate-covered bacon, bacon cinnamon rolls, and more. We Will Rock You, a virtual and live Queen Nation, a tribute to the music of Queen, benefiting the Aphasia Center of West Texas, has been scheduled for May 7th at the Horseshoe Amphitheater, 2514 Arena Trail, Midland. Reserved VIP party starts at 6:30 p.m., main gates and concessions open at 7:30 p.m. The concert starts at 8 p.m. General admission is free. Sponsorships are available. Sponsors receive reserved seats, catered food, host bar, valet parking, and more. For virtual option, party packs are available featuring local snacks, craft beer, and live stream concert access. For party pack or to reserve your spot, visit www.aphasia.com. wtx.org/concert. Harmony Public Schools hosting virtual job fair. Harmony Public Schools West Texas is hosting a virtual job fair from 8 a.m. to 11 a.m. April 24th for the 2021-2022 school year. Harmony Public Schools is looking for individuals who are interested in inspiring and preparing students to excel in college and beyond. Available positions include campus instructional coaches, pre-kindergarten through grade 12 teachers, special education life skills teacher, reading and math interventionist, child nutrition assistant, and assistant teachers. Positions vary by campus. Interested applicants can register by visiting the job fair tab on the district website. Harmony Public Schools are tuition-free, open enrollment public charter schools providing high-quality education with a focus on science, technology, engineering, and math, STEM. For students in pre-kindergarten through 12th grade, Harmony Public Schools West Texas District has 4 campuses in El Paso and 1 in Odessa and Lubbock. Resource Fair set in Big Spring. Permian Basin Adult Literacy Center, PBALC, and the Permian Basin Oil and Energy Ministry have partnered to offer the community of Big Spring a resource fair. This free event will be from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. at the Church of Nazarene, located at 1400 South Lancaster Street in Big Spring. Various vendors will be present to offer information about the services they provide. Brescia appointed to SBEC. Permian High School social studies teacher Bob Brescia has been appointed to the State Board of Educator certification by Governor Greg Abbott. His term expires February 1, 2023. Abbott also has appointed Kirsten Arbuckle and Melissa Isaacs and reappointed Rohanna Brooks Sykes and Emily Garcia to the State Board for Educator certification for terms set to expire on February 1, 2025. The board develops certification and continuing education requirements and standards of conduct for public school teachers. Brescia is a teacher of record for Ector County Independent School District and an adjunct professor for Wilmington University. He previously served as executive director for the John Ben Shepherd Public Leadership Institute and served as the head of school for St. Joseph Academy in Brownsville. He is a board member of the Salvation Army, Odessa and Constituting America, and a member of the Odessa Information and Discussion Group. He is the former chairman of Basin PBS and the American Red Cross of the Permian Basin and former president of Rotary International, Greater Odessa. Brescia is a U.S. Army veteran and received a Bachelor of Arts in Civil Government from Norwich University, a Master of Science in Computer Information Systems, and a Master of Arts in International Relations from Boston University, European Division, and a Doctor of Education in Executive Leadership with distinction from George Washington University. The appointments are subject to Senate confirmation. Local News Roundup. Teenager charged with pointing gun at passing vehicle. A teenager was arrested after he reportedly pointed a shotgun at a passing vehicle, which was occupied by 5 people, including 3 juvenile females. Noah Flores, 18, was charged with 5 counts of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon, a second-degree felony, criminal mischief, a Class A misdemeanor, and public intoxication, a Class C misdemeanor. The reported incident happened at 1:16 a.m. April 13th, in the 1200 block of Clifford Street. Officers reportedly arrived at the area and saw a man, later identified as Flores, which matched the description of the actor, with a gun running eastbound. Officers made contact in the 1100 block of West Clement Street, and they noticed Flores had a strong odor of an alcoholic beverage coming from his breath and person. Flores also had slurred speech, red bloodshot eyes, and unsteady balance. Flores stated that he had been drinking beer. Due to the intoxication level that Flores was in, officers reportedly believed he was a danger to himself and others if Flores ran into traffic and got hit by a vehicle. Flores was arrested for public intoxication. Investigation showed that Flores also intentionally pointed a gun at a passing vehicle in the area of the 1200 block of Clements Street, which was occupied by five people, the affidavit stated. The driver and the passenger of the vehicle were identified as Diana Lujan and Damian Ramirez, respectively. There were also three juvenile females. Officers reportedly issued a search warrant for Flores' residence located in the 1300 block of Keeling Street. Officers noticed damage to the wall that was caused by the barrel of a shotgun inside the residence. Officers found a Steven 238A 20-gauge shotgun in the attic. The shotgun had drywall on the barrel, which was consistent with the damage on the wall. The shotgun was also described as the one that Flores had in his possession when he engaged in the criminal act. Flores' parents reportedly told officers that Flores was the only one at the residence at the time of the incident. Flores was arrested, charged, and transported to the Ector County Law Enforcement Center. He has six bonds totaling $302,000 and was still in custody as of Tuesday morning. The Odessa American requested the probable cause affidavit from the City of Odessa at 2:26 p.m. April 14th. The City of Odessa released the probable cause affidavit to the Odessa American at 4:27 p.m. on April 19th. Man and woman charged with breaking into residence to assault couple. A 30-year-old man and a 28-year-old woman were arrested after they reportedly broke into a residence to assault another man and woman. Gustavo Castaneda, 30, and Bianca Castellano, 28, were each charged with burglary of a habitation with intent to commit other felony, a first-degree felony. Castaneda was also charged with driving while intoxicated with a child under 15 years old, a state jail felony. The reported burglary and assault happened around 1:24 a.m. April 15th in the 1000 block of Del Rio Drive. Officers reportedly saw the victim, identified as Carlos Carrasco, standing in front of the residence with a large cut to his head with a large amount of blood. Carrasco stated that he was sleeping when he heard a noise at the door that sounded like people trying to break in. Carrasco stated that three subjects, which included Castaneda and Castellano, forcefully entered the residence and began assaulting him and his girlfriend, identified as Stacy Rodriguez. Carrasco reportedly told officers that he was assaulted with a C-clamp tool used by Castaneda and the other unknown man, then left driving a red Ford Expedition. Carrasco attempted to take off the license plate prior to them leaving, and he damaged the license plate cover. After he was discharged from the hospital, Carrasco contacted officers and provided Castaneda's information, confirmed by Facebook, as well as other officers' knowledge of Castaneda, the affidavit stated. Castaneda was reportedly seen driving a vehicle matching the description given by Carrasco. Castaneda was found to have bloody clothing as well as an injury to his left cheekbone, which was consistent with being involved in a fight. The license plate of the red Ford SUV that Castaneda was driving was damaged and had blood on it. After he was given his Miranda warning, Castaneda admitted to taking Castellano to the residence in the 1000 block of Del Rio Drive so she could assault Carrasco. Castaneda and Castellano were each arrested, charged, and transported to the Ector County Law Enforcement Center. Castaneda had two bonds totaling $64,000 and posted bail on April 16th, jail records show. Castellano had one bond totaling $60,000 and she posted bail on April 16th. Superintendent Summit Set for May by Ruth Campbell. The Permian Strategic Partnership and Education Partnership of the Permian Basin are joining forces to present a superintendent summit with district chiefs from West Texas and eastern New Mexico. The gathering will be held from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. May 5th at the Bush Convention Center in Midland. Ector County ISD Superintendent Scott Murray and T.J. Parks, Hobbs Municipal Schools Superintendent, are acting as point people for the event. A PowerPoint presentation during the virtual meeting So the meeting will feature strategic planning focused on system-level plans that will help districts effectively address the unfinished learning of students and strategic planning for use of one-time federal funding. Murray said Texas and New York are the only two in the country that have not released CARES dollars to their school districts. In those three tranches of funds, Murray said there is education funding. He added that districts across the country are waiting for those funds to address learning loss. The total funding, Murray said, would be about $100 million for ECISD over the next 3 years. This is one-time funding that can be used not only to address learning loss, but for new ventilation systems for schools and personal protective equipment. He added that this is a chance to talk about the right kind of strategic investments for students. PSP Chief Executive Officer Tracy Bentley said this is a rare opportunity, but hopefully it will be the first of many. I can't think of two better leaders to lead this great opportunity, she said. Bentley added that she wants to hear about what they're thinking. Vega, Executive Director of the Education Partnership, said what's exciting is this could help transform the landscape of education in this region. Murray said advocacy is important right now to free up the federal funds. The fear is that the state will use the federal funds to replace already designated state funds. Jim Nelson, chair of the Texas Impact Advisory Council, said he thinks it's unlikely this will happen, but it's important to advocate for the districts through local lawmakers. Nelson, who has been a Texas Education Agency commissioner and interim superintendent at ECISD, said it's important that local communities have control over this funding and spend it wisely. That's the reason for this May 5th meeting, is so we can talk about how to wisely invest these dollars, Murray said. He noted that the ECISD Board of Trustees in March passed a resolution urging lawmakers to let the federal funds flow to Texas school districts. Also at Tuesday's meeting was the launch of the Grow Our Own Action Network. The three chairs include Jonathan Fuentes, Executive Dean of Academic Partnerships at Odessa College, Courtney Wardlaw, Public and Government Affairs Advisor, Permian Basin of XTO Energy, and Lisa Wyman, Senior Vice President, Credit Union Development and Human Resources at Complex Community Federal Credit Union. Just before COVID-19 hit, the Grow Our Own concept was endorsed at the last meeting of the leadership team held at the Sewell Auto Tech building. The idea is to prepare students for not only automotive technician positions, but teaching, healthcare, athletic training, and other fields. We're really excited to get to work, Fuentes said. We're meeting with the Executive Committee of the Education Partnership to determine their service area. All of us are very passionate about the work we're going to do in the Permian Basin, and we look forward to working with you, Fuentes said. Synergy Heroes call for nominations. Synergy Entertainment Group has announced its call for nominations for Synergy Heroes, a community initiative that celebrates educators in Midland, Odessa, Amarillo, Tulsa, Granbury, Marble Falls, and Copperas Cove for all their hard work in and out of the classroom. In honor of Teacher Appreciation Week, Synergy asks students, classes, and parents to submit a short video highlighting their teacher's superpower. Nominations will be accepted through April 30th online at www.synergy.com/heroes. Synergy will announce three finalists from each Synergy market and category, and Synergy fans will have the opportunity to vote for their favorite finalists during Teacher Appreciation Week, May 3rd through the 7th. Synergy will announce the final winners on the week of May 10th and surprise the winner from each Synergy market with a season pass for movies at Synergy and a $200 Target gift card. The evening classes will also receive Synergy game cards and a special movie offer. Feel free to reach out to zrocke@synergy.com for more information or to schedule an interview. Turtle bandits sought. The Odessa Police Department is seeking two suspects who reportedly stole a large turtle valued at $200 from the Music City Mall playground. OPD has released a photo of the suspects that can be seen at tinyurl.com/9D93HDU3. Anyone who recognizes either suspect is encouraged to contact Detective Y. Medrano at 432-333-3641 or Odessa Crime Stoppers at 432-333-TIPS and reference case number 20-0022061.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.